The next great Microsoft advancement is here. Microsoft 365 combines simple IT management with all the best-in-class productivity tools found in Office 365 and adds world-class security features. The result is one secure platform to bring the modern workplace to your workforce. How does it work? Well, since Microsoft 365 is cloud-based, employees can be productive from anywhere on any of their favorite devices, including their personal ones. No Wi-Fi? No problem. Microsoft 365 works offline and syncs up later. And while the use of personal devices often represents a risk for businesses, Microsoft 365 allows personal info to be walled off from business info. It even prevents files from being transferred outside of the Windows environment and onto personal hard drives. Microsoft 365 also ensures that both the Windows platform and security are always up to date, keeping every device secure and productive. It even allows you to wipe all company data instantly if a device is lost or worse. As always, we'll get you up and running quickly so you can start taking advantage of all the new features that Microsoft 365 has to offer. And we'll be there to help at any time with our best-in-class support. Want to learn more? Give us a call today.
All right, sir. So now we are in open mic time. And so when you said you've got this contract story, did you have anything else specific that you want to talk about in terms of the MSA show that I did with Bradley Gross?
So I don't have an MSA, right?
You do not.
But I do use contracts for everything that I do, but I don't have an MSA. I mean, it kind of encompasses an MSA because I have a whole terms and conditions and everything like that. So, I mean, believe me, the show is it's a great idea. And like he says, right, it's like your constitution, right? It's like the thing that shouldn't change. So I'm sure there's room for improvement in my world. The only thing that I said, I did have a question. I think he might have answered it, or I might know the answer to it. Pretty much, if something conflicts in your regular contract in the MSA, the regular contract takes precedence, right?
I think it depends. And I've not asked him that either, because when I redid all my stuff, we did it with the MSA first, as, mm-hmm. you know, everything goes back to the MSA. So when I create a statement of work, basically the statement of work says, here are the things, unless otherwise, you know, indicated later in this contract, it will refer back to the MSA. So if you do a statement of work and say something else, then the statement of work is what's going to take precedence.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Cause I'm just saying, sometimes you have those times where, you know, something you want to modify, right? In some
form, right. And what he's always said
is, instead of 9 to 5, maybe you bend for a client and tell him 9 to 6, right?
You know, and that would be a statement of work just for that client.
Correct. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, for the most part, my agreements are individualized. I feel like an MSA, which I get it, I get it wholeheartedly. You have to be very certain.
Yes.
Right? It's the best way to.
Well,
to put
here's the way I'm looking at it, is if you are that particular upfront with the MSA, that leaves you room to be less certain when you do your statement of work, because you know that you've got the MSA to fall behind. So you don't have to spend every single statement of work, you know, making sure you've covered every single base.
Correct.
Because you've already covered
that,
it.
That I understand.
All right. So tell me about this this customer that you have that you're having fun with.
Yes. So one of the big things to me, right? At the end of the day, yes, everything that we do, we have agreements, right? Any contract client, obviously contract means there's an agreement in place, right? And at the end of the day, and I think we talked about this the last time you and I spoke, was this was the client that is kind of on an older style agreement. And as time has gone on, right, we do things a little bit differently, right? And they were complaining about, hey, you know, we're not using hours, but we're paying for them. And, you know, we kind of told them, hey, look, you know, this is the new way that we do things. But reality is none of this has anything to do with the current situation, which is they're behind on payment. It's just that simple. And one of the things that's in our contract is, you know, if we do something wrong, you have to notify us in writing and we have 30 days to remedy that, right? And if we don't, you fire us, you don't owe us anything, we all walk away and that's that, right? On the flip side, same thing for us to the client. We give, the only thing that the client really needs to do is pay us, right? That's really what it is. So if you don't pay us, you're considered in default. And because of that, we now have cause in which where we can terminate your agreement after giving you 30 days notice so you can remedy that situation, okay? So the situation at hand here is we haven't been paid and they're behind on their bills and it doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy. And the main reason I think it doesn't, the main reason it doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy is there's no communication, okay? There's about 60 employees in this company. The employees are still calling us for support, right? And we're still doing what we're supposed to do. But we have already sent out the you're in default notice and let them know and highlighted the terms of the agreement that have financial consequences for them and let them know exactly what's going to happen once, I'll call it, D-Day hits. As I was telling you offline, yesterday I took a peek. I said, uh-oh, it's about 10 days now, you know, when the 30 days will be up. So I wrote another letter saying, hey, just a reminder, we still haven't received payment. And in 10 days, these services will be disabled, right? Not only will they be, you know, including, you know, our help desk, your Datto device, your spam filtering, right? All that stuff that we provide will be disabled. And then at that point, we're going to hand everything over to the attorneys. The attorneys are going to do what they do. And then you're going to owe us a heap of money above and beyond what you already owe us. So, you know, my biggest thing is, and this is a client that's been a client for a while, right? And I know you had your recent situation with a client who was a client for a while. And what people have to understand, and even you know, the person at this office who plays the office manager was like, why are you being like this? I said, listen, I'm earning a living, right? And as are you. If you came to work for 2 months and your bosses didn't pay you, would you still go to work? You know, all of a sudden it's different, right?
Of course.
I'm personalizing, right? But the thing is, you know, I'm a utility, right? The service we all provide, in a way, it's a utility, right? Meaning they need us to do what they need. Right? You know, we're supporting them. We're helping them make money or whatever it is that they do. I don't care. It doesn't matter if the business makes money or not, right? We're supporting the infrastructure and the environment and the employees. And my whole thing is you can't expect me to do everything I'm supposed to do when you're not holding up your end of the bargain. And that's almost like was her thing. Well, why are you acting like this? You know you're going to get paid. No, I don't know I'm going to get paid because guess what? I haven't been paid. It was 3 weeks ago. I was told that there was a check in the mail. I don't know what kind of mailbox you guys used. I still didn't receive the check. And not only that, the partner who I deal with all the time is not communicating with me, right? So not communicating with me does not make me feel warm and fuzzy, right?
Yep.
So, you know, I'm just doing what I need to do, making sure that I don't invalidate my own agreement. And I hold up my end of the bargain and giving them all of their notifications that they need. And then what's going to happen is going to happen, you know, on the 28th. Now, if I receive a check between now and then, it'll be like this never happened. And I move on and do everything I'm supposed to do. And that's it.
Until the next time.
Until the next time. But I think that's a problem, Marvin. I think that's a real big problem. That, and I see it. I see it in plenty of communities and groups. You know, people are afraid to sue their clients. People are afraid to ask for their money. You know, I've talked to people who were owed $200,000 from clients. I mean, at some level, you know, Warren Buffett always says, If I owe someone $1 million, that's their problem. If someone owes me $1 million, that's my problem, right? So reality is you need to not let it get out of hand. And that's why I, you know, despite them being a great client, you know, up till now and spending a good penny here, you know, all the time, you know, on services, you have to enforce your agreement. Otherwise, you will invalidate your own agreement. And I'm not going to do that.
So one of the best lines that I've ever used, I actually took from one of my clients. I went to him 1 year to raise rates because I hadn't raised it in 3 years. And I said, you know, I've got to do this. And when I showed him, he looked at me and he's like, Mavi, I got to eat. Now, this is an attorney making plenty of money. Eating is not his issue. Okay. He probably spent more on his meals out on the weekend than my grocery bill was for the month. So when it came time later in the relationship, years down the road, when they started falling behind on their payments, and I sent them, this was funny, it was the first time I had sent them a late notice with interest. And the firm administrator, she's like, we don't pay interest. And I said, yes, you do. You pay it to everybody else. You just don't want to pay it to me. And we would go through this thing where he would always, it wasn't him, it was his firm administrator, but it was, you know, it was at his instruction. And so finally I got to the point where I said, look, you guys are falling further and further behind. Now they always paid, but I said, look, I need you guys to pay within the term specified or else we're going to have to terminate this. And they were like, well, why? Why are you? I said, because I got to eat. I mean, I got to pay my bills every single month. And I said, well, just like you guys.
Well, you know, that's what it is. But everyone is worried about themselves. So, and that's okay. That's okay. And I'm going to do what I need to do to worry about myself and my business, right? And that's the whole thing. When you do the same thing that those folks are doing, they look at you like you shouldn't be doing that, right? And I find that extremely hilarious.
Isn't it funny that, now I've had this conversation with techs over the years, and it's almost like the IT industry is, God, how can I say this nicely? Is like the butt floss of every other industry. I mean, nobody treats any other industry as bad as the IT industry gets treated. Now, granted, a lot of that is our fault. We've got people in the industry that, you know, will do whatever to undercut business and to work under the table and fly by night and really make us look bad. But for businesses that are trying to do it the right way, you know, be a legit business. We're incorporated. We pay taxes, you know. It's still one of those things where, well, you're just the IT guy. You know, we've got to pay other people before we pay you.
Well, and that's because we don't, and that's, see, in my opinion, that's where the consequence comes in, right? And I mean, look, I know you did the show the other day on MSAs, right? Which obviously in your world, right, that's going to outline what happens when you don't pay, right? For me, I told you I'm not necessarily using an MSA, but every engagement is a contract, right? So the contract states what's going to happen when you don't pay. And that's the thing. It's the enforcement part. I've had tons of arguments or conversations with colleagues. I had one guy that says, Stan, if a guy owes me $100, I'm taking him to small claims court because it's my money. I worked for it. It's mine. Right. I want it. Yep. Right. And then I have guys who are owed tons of money who say, oh, I'm not going to sue the client. I don't want to mess the relationship up. And I've seen guys justify why someone else isn't paying them for a service. And I'm sitting here like, dude, do you hear yourself? Do you hear yourself? You're justifying why someone else is screwing you out of your money and why you have to be okay with that. You know, I hate to say it, but you're an idiot, right? You know, you're an idiot.
It is because there's no other place where they get away with that. If you're late on your car payment, you know, somebody's coming to take your car. And it's not like they're going to lose money on one car. You know, Henry Ford's family is doing just fine.
Well, I got a story for you. It's a little morbid, unfortunately. So just, I think, last week or 2 weeks up here in Jersey, public service turned off a woman's electricity who was on oxygen for non-payment. Now, supposedly she let them know she was on oxygen, right? But the point was, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some dispute about that, but put that to the side, right? From the business standpoint, right? I don't know how many months this woman owed, right, of non-payment of her electrical. But the point was, the business was like, the hell with you, right? And whatever you have going on, you know, you didn't pay us for a service, and we're cutting it off. And they did, right? Your cell phone bill to get cut off. I'm sure, Marv, you've had this situation, because I know I have more than one. A client who didn't pay their internet bill. Right?
I'm sorry, because I have a great story on that.
So go ahead. No, go ahead. So that's the thing, right? A client doesn't pay the internet bill, and they're looking at you, IT person, why isn't it working? And then you find out, hey, you didn't pay your internet bill. That's why it's not working, mm-hmm. right? So go ahead. Tell me your story.
Well, that's exactly what it was. I get a call. This is a great client. Well, they're not a client anymore, but they were one of those clients that I get a call. It was a Friday morning. And, well, let me go back because I got to set this up. So this was a client that was moving, and they messed up their plans with the move. So the new space wasn't ready before they got out of the old space. So we had to set up their server and I think 4 or 5 workstations at their house. Nice house, big house, marble floors on the water. Okay. So we went and did that, and they would call for service. And this is back when I had techs working for me. I would send a tech to the house. Nobody would be there. And I would be like, you just called us. Oh, well, we weren't home. What? Somebody's got to be there. So that started it all off. So fast forward to a Friday morning, I get a call. And the lady is screaming, my people can't work. I need you to get over to the house and figure out what's going on. Blah, 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 blah. I get there, and exactly what you said. They had not paid their internet bill, and it was off. And she had the nerve to say, well, can you fix that? I'm like, no, I can't fix it. And she's like, well, I can't right now. I'm at my son's recital.
Well, I guess it wasn't that important, that was.
Like, are you kidding me? And this was a customer who, this is how bad it got. Now, I told you about the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Marble floors, right?
On the water.
On the water. Marble floors in the garage, by the way. Forgot to mention that. So, they fall behind. I play basketball with the guy. And he's like, well, you got to take it up with her. I don't keep track of the money. I'm like, yeah, right. In your Gucci bag.
mm-hmm.
So 90 days come, I send them to collections. Immediately she calls, Marvin, why did you do that? They were mean to me. And I'm like, yeah, because I want my money. You're mean to be my by not paying me. So needless to say, they weren't a client for much longer, but they did pay.
So I was told this story or this mindset by some wealthy folks, which is they purposely don't pay bills in which, you know, on time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bills in which people tend not to have a recourse, right? The landscaper, right? The pool guy, right? The IT guy, right? Let's put us in that bracket, right? These are people who, you know, they see as not necessarily having essential services in some way, shape, or form, or your recourse, right? Or your recourse in terms of your action for not being paid is not as great as obviously the utility company, right? Who could turn off their power.
Mm-hmm.
So it's literally this entire power struggle of who's important to pay on time and who's not.
But they do have to realize now that as we develop these IT services that are managed, we can turn off stuff. You know, especially if you're dealing with, you know, email, internet service. Now, you know, I have a relationship with my ISPs. Now, I'm not going to be able to call them and say, hey, this customer hasn't paid, shut them down. But they know that if they get a late notice from their ISP, they're going to pay it. They know that if they get something with regards to your email is going to stop working, your domain will be shut down. They panic when they see that. If there was a way that we could reach in and just literally shut down the server, because you know what? How many of these businesses...
You can if it's in the cloud.
Well, you can. Because, of course...
If you're doing hardware as a service, right? Hardware as a service.
It's not until they realize that they cannot work and make that money that they're trying to, you know, lord over us, that all of a sudden we're on equal par. Until they go and find somebody else who won't be as mean as we are.
Well, and that's the thing, right? At the end of the day, you know, what people call mean, like, I don't call it mean that I expect you to pay me my money. Like, in what world is that considered mean, right? That's just the funny thing. It's not mean by any means necessary. If you didn't want to pay me, then don't sign the contract and don't engage me. Right. It's very simple in my book. Right. I don't consider this to be complicated at all. So my thing is, once you engage me, once you want to pay me, once you hire me and agree to the rates or to the project cost, you know, there is no I don't want to pay you from that point forward. That's what doesn't make any sense to me. And you if that's me being mean, then I'm the meanest son of a you know what that there is.
But here's the thing I've found is putting a contract in front of them at the very beginning sets the table that this is serious, you know, and it's not mean. It's a contract. A plus B equals C. You ask me to do work, I do it, you pay me. It's as simple as that. And as you said, if we have the markers as to if you don't do this, then this happens. That's not mean. I'm just following the steps that you and I agreed upon as to what would happen. It's business. Hey, business is business.
yeah, until it's not. Remember, everyone's your friend when they want a deal, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
So I know I got a question for you. I'm going to throw it back on you. I mean, because I know I've heard stories and things of the sort. From your perspective, have you heard, you know, colleagues that have contracts and then, in my opinion, like I say, it's a lack of enforcement, right? That they don't want to enforce their contracts, right? That, hey, this person didn't pay for 30 days. They don't want to send them that notice because they've been a good client or they're afraid to lose the account. They're afraid, like, for whatever reason, you know, have you talked to people that have been like that? Do you find that to be a thing in our industry or not necessarily from your?
I find it to be a huge thing. And it comes from all shapes and sizes. You know, a lot of times we think it's the solo tech who's afraid to lose any business, you know, because, you know, even if they're not starting out, there have been guys that have had businesses for 15, 20 years that still operate that way, where they do not want to upset a customer. They do not want to cause any friction. They don't want to rock the boat. They will patiently wait for their money, because the customer will eventually pay. The customer will need something, and they'll, well, I know you owe you some money, so hey, when you come to take care of this, I'll pay both bills. And that's how a lot of techs are. And even some larger, and I'm trying to make sure I don't throw anybody under the bus here, but there are a lot that operate with the mindset that any business is good business. And I just don't operate that way.
But, so is it a tech problem or is it a business problem, right?
I think it's a combination.
You know, obviously, I'm talking about our industry, right? But from your standpoint, you know, obviously you're saying that, like, well, here's an example, right? You work with lawyers, I work with lawyers, right?
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I know for sure, and you correct me, maybe it's different down in Florida, lawyers tend not to sue their clients that owe them money. I know clients that have been stiff for $200,000-$300,000 at a clip.
Yeah, but here's, that's true. But I mean, I'm trying to think of my clients because you know what they can do? They can do a write-off.
Doing a write-off is you losing money. That's you not going after the money that someone owes you.
True. True.
You're taking a loss. You and I could write off, right? If you don't go collect money. But that's my thing. There's something about it because what I've been told by lawyers is every time you sue, if you sue a client for non-payment or whatever, there's a countersuit that's malpractice on that side.
Well, I guess it could be.
And I don't know how it is down there. Supposedly up here in Jersey, if you have a countersuit for if you have a suit for malpractice, even if it's nothing ever comes of it, it's garbage, it's thrown out, your insurance rates still go up.
That could be. I'll be honest, I don't know because I don't ask.
Ask that question. I just think it's interesting, right? I mean, not that I ask, I just hear, right?
Right.
Because it's like, you know, I hear guys working on cases and they're like, I'm never going to see the money for this, right? But the judge won't let me out or whatever the case is. Right?
Well, but you know, here's the thing. Now, I work with insurance defense attorneys. So in that sense, a lot of them will get a block of cases from the insurance companies, 50, 100 cases. And they are in a point where, yeah, they'll work on a case knowing that they're not going to be paid, but they're going to keep doing that because they don't want to lose the other 49 cases that they have from that insurance carrier. So it happens a lot from that perspective. So that I can assure you. But here's to answer your question. Is it us? Is it the tech industry? Here's what I do think. I think most of the time our industry is full of technicians trying to run a business, but can't. You know,
okay.
They're great at being techs, but they're not great at running their business.
Well, I'll tell you how that happens, right? Because I think that it happens in a lot of service businesses, right? You start doing something. Maybe it's for a friend or a family member. Someone starts to pay you. Then that person refers, right? A lot of it is referral in the beginning. We were talking about, right? Then someone refers, and then someone else pays. And then before you know it, you're like, oh, I should probably protect myself. Let me go incorporate or LLC or whatever the case is. And it's like, oh, I have a business now, right? But reality is it started out as a hobby or something that you just kind of did. And, you know, and then people start paying. So, yes, I think, you know, most small businesses in America might fall into that bracket. That's why I love watching all those business shows because mm-hmm. you see it. Not saying that I personally am any different than that. And that's why I always say I envy salespeople, right? Because salespeople, in my opinion, are the best business owners because all they want to do is make a sale and then pass it on to the next person to actually take care of whatever it is and move on to the next, right?
Yep.
So that's the difference between salespeople and people who are technicians or servicers or, you know, the people doing the actual work is that, in my opinion, that the salespeople have no problem letting go after the sale is complete.
Well, and you know, most of us can't because after the sale, that means we got to get to work.
Yeah. I actually sold a guy on something, sold a company on something the other day, a new server, right? And it was a school and I put it in, did everything. And then like, when I came to put it in, the guy's like, I thought you were just a sales guy. I thought you were just a sales guy. I didn't know you were the guy installing it. But at this, you know, I mean, we never really had the conversation, right? I don't have the conversation if I don't have to. But, you know, at that point, it was already done, right? So he didn't mind. Everything got taken care of the way he wanted it to. But it was just funny that, you know, he didn't think of me as the person who was actually going to come in and install this thing when it was time to install.
Oh, that's a good image to have.
You got to take what you got, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, we actually went off on a tangent there, and I was just getting ready to think the concepts that we were talking about, and I can't see my bookshelf from here, but The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Remember that book, or have you read that?
That one I didn't read. What's the general? Give me the 10-second abridged version.
Well, basically, The E-Myth is this entrepreneurial myth that we can take our status from being a worker and turn that into being an entrepreneur, but yet as an entrepreneur, we're still so much focused on the work because that's all that we know. And so his books, he's got the E-Myth Revisited, and he's got a couple of books based on how to be, you know, how to turn from being the worker into really being an entrepreneur and business owner and getting out of the mindset of working in the business and working on the business. You know, that phrase that we always hear, you know, work on your business, not in it, because most technicians want to be entrepreneurs, but they don't know how to stop being a technician.
I do think that there's another thing in that too. I think you really have to be honest with yourself about what you enjoy doing. Because being manager or business owner or whatever role you want to play at that C level, let's say, right? You got to be honest whether you enjoy it or not. And if you don't enjoy it, that's where I've seen partnerships work, right? You know, where you have two people. Like, I've seen partnerships where one person enjoys working on the business, growing the business, creating the business plan, right? How we're going to move forward, the structure. And then the other person is essentially the worker bee, right? Likes, you know, I bring the clients in. Marv likes to service them, right? Get them all going, right? So you have to really be honest about what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And I don't know what the book, I don't know what that book highlights or doesn't highlight, but I think within ourselves, you just can't lie to yourself about what it is, right? Because I know people who manage employees and they say, I just feel like I babysit all the time. All these guys do is complain, right? I don't have the patience for this, right? So you have to be honest about with yourself about what role you actually want to play in this world. And guess what? For some people, you may want to just be a one-man band. For some other people, you may want to have five technicians. For other people, you may want 1,000, right? And you just want to like be on a beach somewhere and have everything run itself. You just have to be honest with yourself at the end of the day.
That is true. So I'm going to grab that book when we're done here. I'll shoot you a link tonight, and then I will actually put this in the show note. It's a great book. Now, I can't say that it is the definitive book on that subject, but it is a good book to read and understand trying, you know, to move from a, you know, mindset of a technician to the mindset of an entrepreneur, which is, you know, in a sense what I did, because the way that they described it is, you mentioned that a lot of people start out as a hobby and turn it into a business, whereas a lot of people actually started out working for somebody else and thinking, I can do this better.
Mm.
So they're making that much money off of my labor. Well, I'll go work for myself and I'll make all the money.
Keep 100%.
Yeah. Which, you know, is a myth. Because we ain't keeping all that money.
Nobody remembers there's these things called expenses.
Right. And because that's how I started. You know, I actually was working for a guy at a shop. And after a couple of years, I was running the tech room. Yeah, it was a retail store with a service department in the back. The service department literally was the backbone of that business because we were one of the few stores in Fort Lauderdale where people could bring their computers to get it fixed. Because a lot of the places, they just didn't do that. I think CompUSA had just started up and they had they're out of business. They had a crappy...
Well, you know, I was about to say, you know where they are now, right?
They had a crappy service model.
I didn't want to say that.
And, you know, this was in the 90s. So we were still in that kind of feeling out stage of what is this computer industry going to be? Now, here in Fort Lauderdale, there wasn't a lot of techs that would go on site to businesses to do work. And I kept pushing him. I said, we got to get into that. He's like, no, there's no money in that. You know, everybody's going to come to the shop. So as people would come into the shop and say, hey, I don't want to bring my computer here. Can you come to my office or can you come to my house? No, we wouldn't do that. He wouldn't let us go after hours as long as we bought our parts from him. Mm-hmm. You know, if we needed parts and, you know, back then it was, you know, CD-ROMs and video cards and, you know, modems. Oh, 56K modems were huge, you know, selling those things at like $100 a pop.
If only.
So he would let us do that as long as, and then I realized, you know, I was making as much money working nights and weekends as I was working at his shop. And it was one of those things where, you know, I said, you know, I can do this. And he's like, no, you can't. And I'm like, all right, we'll see. Here's my resignation. And here I am 21 years later, still rolling.
Where's he at?
He's in a completely different business.
But still in business?
Well,
is he running it?
No.
Is he running it?
No. He sold that business. Here's hilarious. He actually called me 2 times after I left. I think the first time was like 2 or 3 years where he wanted to know if I needed space. And I could come in and he would give me space, you know, to run my business if he could piggyback off of it, you know, and, you know, in a sense, you know, sell me out as, you know, the outside service. And I said, no. And then he called. God, I'm trying to remember the exact date because it was funny. I have it somewhere. He actually called and wanted to go into a partnership.
And you didn't jump on that?
I actually met with him. And it was funny because there was a part of me that thought, I could come back in. Because the dude, I'm not going to say he was close to retirement, but he should have been. Because that was my thought, is I could roll in, be a partner, and when he's done, I'll just take the store and I'll have my, you know, services out of the back. But there was just something that just didn't sit right in our negotiations. And, you know, the amount of money he was asking me to put up told me, you don't want me to partner with me. You need me to partner with you because you need money. And I said, no.
Cash strap.
And then like a year later, he ended up selling the business, getting out of the industry, doing something completely different. And then like another year later, the business actually shut the doors.
Wow.
That's it. That was.
Well, they all can't be like us.
Nope. So, all right, my good friend. Well, I appreciate the time tonight in talking to me. Any other thoughts pop in your mind before we end off here?
Nah, just don't be afraid to enforce what you've put in place and get what's yours. It's just that simple, man. Street mentality, you know? Get what's yours.
Yeah, that's right. You earned it. Get it. And, you know, you went through all the trouble to put it down on paper, to get it signed. You're not being a bad guy. You're not being mean. You're just doing what you said you would do. So, in a sense, you're being true to your word.
Wait, and let's not forget something. The minute you fail to perform, your client will have no problem doing whatever needs to be done to get themselves out of the contract without paying any fees, and will follow that, right? Mm-hmm. So if they, you know, the same way you give them the opportunity, you also have the opportunity.
All right. Now in Florida, we understand that because Florida is a right to work state. So anybody can fire anybody for any reason.
No, we're the same up here.
All right. All right. All right, folks, thank you again. This is Stanley Lusant, my buddy from the north on the shores of New Jersey.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
All righty, we'll catch you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in just a few minutes to wrap up the show. Of course, I don't know if we're really wrapping up, so.
There we go, man. Thanks, bud.
All right.